Jesus save.
Mormon Mental Health is a production of Mormon Stories Podcast and the Open Stories Foundation. All donations go directly towards keeping the podcast alive and towards supporting its listeners. To support the podcast, please consider a donation today at mormonmentalhealth.org. And thanks for listening. Jordan
Compass. Welcome to another episode of Mormon Mental Health. Tonight I have the Montgomery family that is willing to be interviewed, and I'm so happy to have them here with me. I've got Tom, who's the father, and Wendy, the mother, and Jordan, who is a 15-year-old son, and Susanna, 14-year-old daughter. And the reason why I'm interviewing this family is because they have recently, over the last few years, gone through a coming-out process of their gay son. And I came across an article that Susanna actually wrote called Oblivious, and it was published on the blog called No More Strangers, which is an LGBT Mormon forum where there's support for LGBT members in the Mormon community. And since then, they've been involved in a lot of other things that are really neat that are happening, such as being part of a documentary called Families Are Forever, which is being done by the Family Acceptance Project. Really important work being done there. And they were just at the Affirmation Conference, which occurred in Salt Lake City, I believe, in the last month or so, and spoke briefly and were part of that movement, as well as Susanna being able to win an award called Youth Ally of the Year. So welcome, Montgomery family.
Hi.
Hey. How are you?
We're going to try to make this as clear as possible with five of us on the line, but I think we'll be able to hopefully go forward well. They live in Central California, I believe, and Tom, you have a marketing business there. Wendy, you're a voracious reader and very involved right now in LGBT issues, and anyway, I just thought I'd give you all a little bit of an opportunity to introduce yourselves briefly.
Okay. Well, yeah, we live in Central California, and Jordan came out about a year and a half ago, and it was as rough as that type of thing is, it was also a very spiritual experience for us and our family.
I think I forgot to mention that you're all obviously an active Mormon family, correct? As far as...
Yes. Yeah, I was the Elders Quorum president at the time, and we are still active in the church. So, yeah, that's very important to us. And of course, all of the issues navigating being active, being a member, and navigating all of the issues with other members knowing is really the source of most of our issues.
As far as a community type of environment?
Yeah, we're in a very conservative place, and I think most people, you know, we 5 years ago, this was a very, you know, we were in the middle of Prop 8, and that was something that we actually, you know, we assisted with at the time, and Prop 8 still colors how a lot of people see this issue.
As far as people in the church, you mean?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Can you quickly, I guess, before I ask the others to introduce themselves a little bit further, can you give me a quick timeline of your son, I guess, comes out and talks to you? I want to talk to Jordan a little bit more about that, but comes and talks to you as far as tells you what's happening for him, and then how did you go about in informing the community and I guess specifically the ward community?
Well, this is Wendy. I'm the mom. As a way of introduction of our family, my husband and I come from really conservative, active Mormon families. We're raising our family the same way. We have five children. Jordan is our oldest. He is our gay son, and he's 15. And then we have four other children, and we have raised them active, conservative members of the church. 5 years ago, in 2008, our bishop approached us and asked us if we would be willing to volunteer our time to help with the Yes on 8 campaign. And we said yes at the time. We at the time Jordan was 9, going in and turning 10, and you know, we had heard our whole life that it was important to say yes when the church asks you to do something, that it's an opportunity to serve and it's an opportunity for blessings. And I just had heard that you just don't say no when the church asks you. So we said yes, pretty much without thinking. And we went door to door, gave time. We didn't give financially because we couldn't at the time, other than paying tithing. And fast forward a couple years into January of last year, January of 2012, when we find out that Jordan is gay. And, you know, looking back on our Prop 8 experience and some of the things that Jordan had said to us after we knew he was gay, about that he had made plans to never, ever tell us that he was gay. And we had asked him why. And he said, well, because I knew that you hated gay people because of Prop 8. So even though I know that wasn't the church's intended message, that was the message that my child got, was that his church and his parents hated gay people. And we had a sign in our yard, and, you know, he walked home from school and he walked past that sign every day. And even though he didn't have the vocabulary at the time and didn't really understand what it was about himself that made him feel different from everybody else, at some level, he knew that was about him. And it's probably one of the biggest regrets that my husband and I have, that we were involved with that. And, you know, I don't think that it was, and, you know, I know for sure that the church was not intending to send that message, but for people in our situation, that's the message that was received. And it's the message that we've been trying to undo with our son.
Okay. So then walk me through how you came about communicating this information to other people outside of your immediate family.
Well, Jordan, everything we have done has been with Jordan's permission and approval. We never outed him without him wanting to be outed. But we had decided in August of last year, probably 6 or 7 months after we had learned about him being gay, that it was, he didn't want to hide anymore. He didn't want to be in the closet. And as for my son, he's not one of those types of kids that can really pass for a straight kid. You know, he's over here giggling. He knows it's true. You know, he
was already being bullied in school and in other places.
Yeah, that even if we hadn't acknowledged the fact that he was gay, he was being perceived as being gay. So the bullying and the teasing was already there. So we felt that it was important because we didn't want him to have to fake it. We wanted him to just be who he was, and that we needed to tell people. And we were hoping by telling people that it would kind of demystify the whole thing, and all of the gossiping and the rumors would stop, because, you know, we would say, yes, he is gay. He's a fantastic kid, you know, moving on to the next conversation. And so we decided the best way to do that is we wrote a letter that Jordan helped us with. And we had talked to our immediate family before this letter, so they knew. But we wrote this letter and we had emailed it out to all of our extended family and friends. And then a couple days after that, we posted it on Facebook, and it kind of went viral. I wasn't expecting it to, you know, travel as far and wide as it did. But we stopped counting after about 500 responses and comments and messages back. And there was only a few that were really negative and critical of our decision to do that. Most of them were very positive and loving comments. It had been, as far as we could track it on Facebook, it had been reposted over 200 times. And we had had people tell us that they had used it in a Relief Society lesson and as family home evening material in their families. So that's kind of how we got the word out. And so he didn't just came out, he crashed out to everybody, everywhere. So it was a terrifying thing for us to do as parents, as a family. It was terrifying for him. And to tell you a little bit of the courage of my son, he set the timing of this, and That letter went out 2 days before he started high school as a freshman in a new school with only one or two kids there that were his friends.
Wow.
So if, in case that day's not scary enough, let's start it with, and I'm gay in a very conservative, you know, city.
Right.
So he's a pretty amazing kid.
You called yourselves conservative members of the church and said that you're raising your kids in a conservative way. Can you define that for me as far as what do you mean by that term?
Well, growing up, we did everything exactly the way the church asked us to do. We were kind of discouraged playing with other kids that weren't members of our church. We were kind of kept in this little protective Mormon bubble where most of our friends were Mormon. Everybody we dated was Mormon. We went to Mormon colleges, just very, very conservative. Anything that was thought of as progressive or liberal or pushing the envelope at all was discouraged in our homes growing up. And I guess we just have sort of perpetuated that in our own homes. Conservative, like, well, I'll let my husband take this. He's got something to say.
I would think just very traditional and more of orthodox. I mean, all of my siblings went on missions. All of my wife's siblings, except for her sister, went on missions. And, you know, everybody, in fact, it's probably an exception in that all of our brothers and sisters and their families are all active, and our parents are active, and everybody's been married in the temple, and it's just, I can't think of anybody who's even fallen away from the church without going to, like, distant cousins.
Very, very loyal, very committed to, obviously, being members of the church, very much a part of your family identity.
And, oh, sure.
And how you were raising your children, and even maybe you're alluding to some political ramifications of that, or ways that you would see the world around you, obviously.
Yeah, for certain. Other than neither one of us was actually raised in Utah or Idaho.
Right.
Other than that, we're about as Mormon as you can get.
Okay. So Jordan and Susanna, take a few minutes just to introduce yourselves.
I'm Susanna. I'm 14, and I'm a freshman this year. I'm Jordan's sister, to say.
What are some things that you are involved with other than this or enjoy doing?
I'm the president of the GSA. We got a GSA started this year, so it's really cool.
Okay, so can you tell us what GSA stands for?
GSA is a gay-straight alliance. Me and Jordan want it to be like a place where kids who are being bullied, even if they're not gay, or they're just allies, to come and be able to have a good time and feel safe, like a safe environment for them.
So this is like a school club that you started? Like,
yeah.
It is a school club.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And it wasn't there before this year?
No.
It hadn't been there since Prop 8, coincidentally.
Okay.
It disappeared during Prop 8.
So it actually existed prior to Prop 8, but now it's been reinstated by you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
She walked in the first day of school and went to the office and asked to start the GSA club.
Amazing.
As a freshman.
Okay, so when you say we started it, do you mean you and Jordan, and other kids, or was it, what do you mean by that?
Well, it was more me and Jordan, so.
Okay. And how many kids are part of this group now?
About 35-ish.
That's great. Okay.
Yeah. We've had two meetings.
Okay, good for you. Jordan, hello.
Hey.
Tell me about yourself.
Oh, well, I'm Jordan, and I'm a sophomore at my high school, and I honestly can't wait to get out of high school because freshman year I had some problems with bullying, but now it's a lot better because my sister is such a great ally of mine, and she started the GSA like for me and for all the other gay members at our high school, which is way cool.
Tell me a little bit about this bullying type of experiences. What are you referring to?
Well, we have to do PE the first 2 years of high school in here in California, and you have like, it was mainly, like, and we had to dress out for locker rooms, and I'd get dressed, and as I was walking out, people would make comments like, you're a fag, or, like, they would pretend to, these straight guys would pretend to flirt with me, and it was really uncomfortable, and I just kind of didn't say anything for a long time about it. But then when I told my parents, we kind of got the situation fixed, and I ended up going into summer school so I wouldn't have to take PE again, and now everything's a lot better.
So it was mainly in the PE setting that these things would occur?
Yeah.
There was a couple other things. One of the worst experiences was when he would walk home from school. He'd walk through the school parking lot, and there would be a truck of a couple kids waiting for him that would swerve their truck towards him and throw trash at the window and yell effing faggot at him. And a couple times he had to jump out of the way so that the car wouldn't hit him. And this happened like two or three times until we talked with the dean, got it all under control. But it was scary to me because as a sophomore or junior or whoever the kids were that were driving that truck, kids that age don't really have the ability to control a car like that. And when they swerve, if they couldn't correct in time, I mean, they could have hit them. They could have put them in the hospital. They could have killed them. Just thinking that this was a fun thing to pick on the gay kid at school. So we finally got that taken care of, but there's been a few things that have been really, really pretty hard at his school.
Wow.
Yeah, those kids got suspended.
And their license is taken away by the state.
Goodness. That's, you hear about some of these hate crimes and things that happen, that's incredibly frightening.
Yeah.
And a lot to have to deal with emotionally, right, Jordan? I mean, that's a pretty big thing to have to figure out how to feel about.
Yeah, because I thought for the longest time that I didn't have very many friends, and I was just kind of depressed with everything. That was especially in middle school. But I have a lot better thoughts and stuff in myself now.
Mm-hmm. And as somebody alluded to the fact that the bullying started pretty young. Like when do you remember Jordan first being kind of taunted in this way, especially about being gay?
I think it was like late sixth grade to early seventh grade was when it like started, and then it just kind of went on from there.
Okay, so right around middle school age.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So moving to this piece, Susanna, that you wrote called Oblivious. Tell me a little bit about that. What is it about, and how did you get it written, and how did you get it submitted to this blog? And just tell me a little bit about that process.
Well, this man was, what was his name?
Which man?
The man who approached me and asked me to write. Daniel Parkinson asked me to write an article about the things I've done to help protect Jordan and other gay people in our community. So when he asked me to, I decided to write about my experiences protecting and defending other gay people. And a lot of them happened in church settings, like EFY or Girls Camp. So
how did somebody like Daniel Parkinson know about you?
Through my parents.
I think he originally heard the story of Susanna because I had put a post on Facebook just saying how proud I was of her.
Okay.
There was two different instances that she can tell you more about, but they had started one of them with Girls Camp, where our stake president had given them a little talk and then opened it up for question and answer for whatever the girls wanted to ask him. And Susanna asked him a couple questions about being gay and in our church. And his answers were not great, and they were not in line with the church website. So she raised her hand again, you know, not in a rude way, but she called out a little bit and said, well, that's not what the church website says.
So let's back up just a little bit. Susanna, tell me a little bit about what your experience was like when Jordan came out, and was this the first time you started thinking about gay issues, or had you been thinking about things before? Had you had other friends or people you knew that had a similar story to Jordan, or was it really your experience with your brother that kind of made you start thinking about these things? What was all that like for you?
Well, he told me about a month after he came out to my parents. So when he told me, I can't say that I was really surprised, but It was very new for me. I had never really thought about it. I mean, I knew what the word meant, but I didn't know a lot about it.
So, were you scared? Were you confused? Were you weirded out?
I was more nervous for him because I didn't want him to be bullied at school, because I've heard people like yell, "Oh, you're so gay," like in a rude way. I didn't want him to get bullied like that.
So, tell me how you started moving into this type of ally approach of standing up for him. Do you usually stand up for your brother? Is that kind of who you are? Or did you start standing up for him more once you figured out that this was an issue?
I've always been very protective of my friends and my siblings. I don't think it's very cool for people to make fun of other people. It's just not right. I've always kind of been like this, but this kind of pushed me to do more.
Yeah, because you're close in age, right? You're only a year apart, and so have you guys always pretty much gotten along as much as siblings do and been close together? Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So opportunities started coming up where you felt like you could stand up for him and get educated about the issues. Like, for instance, how did you know about MormonsandGays.org from the church? How did you know to start asking those questions at church, or what drove you to that?
I think I learned about the website through my parents. They were talking about it, and then I asked them about the website, and I checked it out, and I thought it was really cool. And when things like that came up within the church, I started to say things like, that's not quite what the church website has to say. So,
is that scary to raise your hand and say things, or is it kind of your personality to be outgoing and say, hey, cut it out?
It's a little bit of both. It does make me a little bit nervous to say, but once I start talking, it's pretty easy.
What in particular did you like about the website?
I liked the first sentence.
Which was?
It says, it's not a choice, is basically a summary of the first sentence.
Right.
Yeah.
And it sounds like, as I was reading your paper, that not very many people in our church are aware that our church has taken that stance.
Yeah, it's not connected to the LDS website in any way, but it is church approved. LDS.org, so.
Right. Yeah, and it is things that you can find now that are backed up by, obviously, the 12 apostles and the first presidency and things of that nature, right? I mean, they quote people like that, correct?
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure it says on the website that the views expressed by the three apostles that are on the website are the official position of the church.
Right. Yeah, and it's my understanding that this position was taken, oh, I'm guessing about 10 years ago or so. Does that sound about right? Or maybe even a little bit longer than that. It was definitely not the position when I was going to college at BYU. We were all still kind of talking about that, but it's definitely been a position now for several years that it's no longer.
I think it's still evolving. I think it's changing quite a bit.
When the website came out and in the first paragraph it says something to the effect of, we recognize that being gay is not a choice, that was a really big deal because it was the first place we had seen in writing by a member of the Quorum of the Twelve that this is not a choice. And that's the one thing that has been a hard thing that we've run into with members of the church, is they think it is a choice because previous leaders of the church have said it was a choice. In conference talks and in books that were written, it is called an evil lifestyle. It's a choice. So there have been some really negative things. And I think that is why a lot of members have a hard time with this, is because they think people are choosing to be sinful. But when they look at the website that says, we recognize this is not a choice, then all of a sudden, these people who they think are being sinful and dirty and wrong in all of these negative ideas that people have about gay people, they realize, okay, well, if they're not choosing it, then these people deserve our empathy and compassion and love because they're going through something that's pretty rough. Right. So that's been... That's nice because it kind of gives us a leg to stand on when we go and approach leaders or other members of the church. And it's really helped Susanna when people are saying mean things, especially leaders, about her brother. She's got something to fall back on in her defense of him.
Right. Yeah, and so you talk, Susanna, about these two experiences, going to EFY and going to girls' camp. experiences that I think as parents we would expect our kids to go to and feel comfortable and like they're having fun and being able to bond with other LDS, you know, kids. And all of a sudden you're having to kind of advocate for something that's pretty difficult to advocate for in these, you know, in these kind of church settings. So tell me a little bit about what happened at EFY.
Well, EFY, we were going to our classes and this one teacher brought up the gay issue, and he started talking about it and he said it's wrong, the church doesn't believe in it. So I finally raised my hand and I asked, so what's the church's official stance? And he said they didn't have one. And then I raised my hand again and I said, of course they do, they have a website. And it officially says that it is not a choice and we recognize that. And it's approved by the church. And after the lesson was over, I went up and I talked to him. And we had about half hour long conversation. He was just fighting me the entire time, telling me I didn't know what I was talking about and I didn't have enough experience, but I think he was the one who didn't have enough experience. He didn't even know what the church website was.
He didn't know about the church website at all.
Which is something that I find really, if you have EFY leaders who are approved by the church down there teaching about homosexuality or even marriage and gay marriage and all of those things, they need to be fully educated on what the church's position actually is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and especially with such a, I guess, just such a young audience, you know, it's so impressionable, and also a time when a lot of these sexual ideas and feelings and thoughts are just forming, and kids are trying to figure out their values, and you get some really bad misinformation.
Well, and how many of those kids are gay?
Mm-hmm. There's about 100 people there, so on average, maybe 8 to 10.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, and you said in your paper, Susanna, that somebody came up to you afterwards and thanked you for standing up because they were gay, correct?
Yeah, well, after I talked to the teacher, the president of EFY came up and talked to me and also said basically the same thing the teacher did. And I told him about the church website, and then after that conversation, I didn't notice that one of my friends were standing next to me, like, the entire time, and she looked at me, and she was in tears, and she said, thank you for saying what you said, because I've never told anyone, but I'm gay, which is really sad, because she doesn't feel like she can tell anyone, because she doesn't feel like the church accepts them.
Wow. And Jordan, you were there at this meeting as well?
I was, and I think, like, Susanna, before she raised her hand or said anything, she kind of looked back at me, and I was just kind of listening. I was just all like, why am I here? Like, I was thinking, why am I here? Why am I listening to this, like, when I can be at home, like, enjoying my summer instead of being here? So that's when Susanna turned around, she kind of saw my face, and then she raised her hand and said all those things, and I was so proud of her.
This must not have been the first time, Jordan, that you're sitting in a room like this with people telling you about yourself in a way that's unhealthy in the church. Has this been a normal occurrence for you, or?
Well, my parents have been very good at shielding me from things that people say, but that there have been a few times, of course, but mostly they've done a very good job of protecting me.
Mm-hmm. So this experience at EFY was new, or had you already heard that kind of stuff before, or?
I had kind of known what the general reaction of the people in the church, but I kind of almost prepared myself to kind of hear it at EFY, so yeah.
In other words, you were expecting to hear talks on sexuality or something at EFY?
Well, I wasn't expecting it, but I was just kind of prepared for if somebody said something.
Hmm. Okay.
There's a Strength of Youth pamphlet that tells all of our morals and stuff, and they kind of were talking about that, and they went on, like, sexual purity, and it got to marriage, and how it only should be between a man and a woman.
Which, that's something that's talked about a lot at church, I think, especially after Prop 8, and it's kind of emphasized. So even if they're not saying things like we don't support gay rights, they are just kind of saying this more, well, I hate to use the word passive aggressive, but it's more okay to say, well, marriage is between a man and a woman, and we go from there. But what's that like for you, Jordan, when we talk about it like that?
Like when people kind of talk about it negatively?
Well, or just in general, when you hear lessons at church or talks given or general conference and they start talking about marriage being between a man and a woman, and even though they're not really going into discussions about the gay community, it's kind of implied.
Well, I just kind of feel kind of uncomfortable because I know that they're in saying that marriage is between a man and a woman and that's kind of the only way it is. It's kind of excluding me. Like, I've had some problems with some things that my seminary teacher has said. My current one, not... Like, I've had a really good seminary teacher, and then this one isn't as great. But yeah, I'm just kind of used to it now of hearing things people say.
But it still hurts him.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have a lot of conversations after church, and sometimes when he gets home from school about seminary, that... He doesn't know where he fits in the church, and he doesn't know where his place is. And there is no plan B given for kids that don't fit into the Mormon plan of mission, BYU, temple marriage, becoming a father. Like, that's kind of a boy's checklist of their life. And if you don't fit into that, where is he left with?
Right.
So it's hard for him sometimes.
Well, and I guess that's maybe the point I was thinking myself is just, you know, here's Susanna standing up and saying, hey, you know, cut it out, or do you guys know about this? But I'm guessing, and I don't even know, Jordan, how aware you are of this, because I'm guessing you've heard these messages since you were a little kid, and they're just there, and you expect them to be there, because this is how we talk at church, you know, and so at some point, I think just... to be in survival mode, you just listen. You don't really advocate for yourself or know how to advocate yourself. I mean, you obviously did because you told your parents and you opened up and you became honest about who you were. But I'm talking about in these settings where it's just kind of institutionalized and we hear these kind of messages that are very common and we just say them all the time and we don't even really think twice about what we're saying because we've said it so many times. So I guess that was what I was trying to figure out is if you even realize, you know, when you hear those messages, you're like, oh, well, here it goes again. Or if you're like fuming mad, or if you're depressed, or if you don't even pay attention because it's so, you're so used to it.
Well, I guess it kind of depends. Like, sometimes I've been like almost absolutely furious, but other times it's just kind of sad and depressing for me to hear. And other times when I hear it, I just ignore it because I know, oh, it's just another thing that they're excluding me from. So I just, yeah, I have multiple ways of reacting to it, I guess.
Sure. So back to you, Susanna. Tell us about girls' camp. What happened there?
Well, I was on the third year hike where we hike all day long and then we get to our campsite and then we get dinner and then there was a lesson. But before he started his lesson, he decided to...
He is the stake president.
The stake president decided to do a question and answer to whatever questions we've had about the church. And I raised my hand. The first question I asked, I knew the answer, but I asked if a gay couple is married and they wanted to adopt kids and they wanted to be sealed to them and have a true family in the church, what do they do for that? And basically, he kind of went... He was kind of very taken back by the question. He wasn't really expecting it from a teenage girl. But he basically said they can't, which... and then he kept really trying to change the subject, trying to get other girls to raise their hands, but most of them were just listening to what I had to say. And I asked a few other questions, and then I asked, does the church have an official stance on the gay issue? And he said they don't. And then I told him they have a church website and it says that being gay is not a choice. So after that, the word kind of spread that of what I had done, and I had a few kind of like negative looks, but I had a lot of adults come up to me and say thank you, tell me some personal stories, or that we're thankful that you did that.
So some people might say, oh, well, you put them on the spot or you already knew the answers. Why would you ask questions that you already knew the answers to? What? How would you respond to that?
I more wanted to see if he knew about what... I kind of wanted to see if he knew the answers to them or what he thought about. I wanted to know his opinion because he's telling the bishops what they need to talk about in their wards. And I wanted to see what, if that topic ever came up, what he'd probably say.
So wanting to kind of make sure he was educated on the topic and also get an idea of what his personal opinions were.
Yeah.
All right. So you do get kind of this dual response from people. Some people maybe look at you weird or aren't very friendly to you standing up to things. And on the other hand, you get people who are very thankful and appreciate you and probably, you know, respect you for what you're doing. Do you want to talk a little bit about what that's been like for you to kind of get both of those types of responses and how you deal with them?
Sure. Well, I wrote another article called Lifesaver, and my mom bought these rainbow rings, and they look kind of like the Lifesaver candy, which is kind of where the name of the thing came from. But this one girl, it was like the end of 8th grade year, and she finally came up to me and asked why I wore my rainbow ring every day, and I told her it was to support my gay brother. And then we became pretty good friends. And then about a week later, she told me that she was bisexual and she needed friends because she had cut herself and she was very depressed. And if she hadn't found a friend, she would have tried to commit suicide. So those are kind of the more inspirational stories. But, like, you get the people who don't understand and they kind of, I think they try, but they don't understand or they don't get both sides of the story.
So you've definitely turned into a young activist. How do you feel about playing that role?
I feel like I'm helping people because some people don't like standing up and saying everything they believe in, which I don't do that a lot, but I do it when I feel like it's necessary.
Do you think that your Mormon background prepares you to be an activist in the sense of, you know, the classic stand up for what's right and let the consequence follow and those kinds of, you know, themes that we grew up with?
Yeah, they always, like, stand up for what you believe in. Like, if you want to show your example to everybody, like in primary, we have all those songs about choose the right and love God and everything, so.
How do you feel about you being a Mormon?
I like being a Mormon. Mm-hmm. It definitely, because they always talk about love everyone as Jesus loves you, and it helps you kind of be more loving. Some people don't see the loving side all the time, but if you look at it the right way.
Right. So this experience hasn't necessarily torn you away from the church or made you feel like, oh, the church isn't true or things like that. It's just helped you put things into a different perspective, or how do you see the church moving forward with this issue of supporting LGBT people in a way that you would feel comfortable with as far as claiming your religion, claiming your faith, and saying, yeah, I'm good with, you know, how we're either changing or making decisions or moving forward in support of people like my brother?
Well, the Mormon and Gays website was a huge step in the right direction for the church. It's not everything we want on there, but it's definitely getting going in the right direction. So,
what kinds of things would you want on there?
Well, I would like it to say that we need to be loving and accepting of everyone. And, I mean, it does state that it's not a choice, but some people still believe that some people choose, which some people probably do, but, like, we need to be loving and accepting of everyone, which would be a really good talk to put on there.
Okay. Jordan, let me switch to you for a minute. I know we've kind of talked a little bit about your coming out process, but share with me a little bit more about, you know, how long had you been kind of thinking through these things? You know, when you go back into your childhood or early puberty or even puberty type times, when did this start kind of coming to the forefront of your mind, and when did you start feeling like you were different or that things were not what you maybe had expected them to be?
Well, I always kind of knew I was different. Like, when me and Susanna were younger, and we had all these dress-up things, and Susanna would dress up in my fireman outfit, and I would dress up as, like, the princess. Like, it's kind of funny. And, but when I started to understand what that difference actually was, like, it was in middle school that I kind of realized, but then when I fully realized, I was like, I can't tell anyone. Everyone would be, like, my parents would kick me out. I live on the streets. Like, my life would be ruined. So I decided not to tell anyone until, like, and then, like, go off to college and just disappear, I guess.
Where'd you get this idea that they might kick you out?
Well, I kind of understood what being gay was in our community, and I had heard stories, of course, and it was, like, I knew it was, I kind of thought it as a real threat that I couldn't, that I just wanted to be with my family, but then, again, I didn't want to hurt them.
So you had heard of other kids your age being kicked out or telling their parents and no longer being welcome at home? Is that...
No, I actually had some of my own friends that had that problem, and then, so yeah, mm-hmm. like I had my own friends that had problems that I kind of understood from their experience of what it kind of was like for LGBT people in the real world.
So this was serious consequences. When people opened up their mouth about this, they often found serious consequences.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how did that change for you then? How did the change plan? Why didn't you keep quiet and go till college and figure out your life then?
Well, my friends and my family, they were kind of, I had kind of pulled back. I was depressed. I was just kind of sad all the time because I'm usually like really happy and stuff like that. So when I kind of got depressed and stuff, everybody kind of realized. So then that's when my parents kind of like read my journal about all the things I was writing in there, and that's how they kind of found out, and then they approached me about it, and that's how I came out to them.
Okay, so there was, you were hiding it was having a huge impact on your well-being, your emotional well-being. You were getting depressed, you were getting low, you were isolating yourself. So your parents were starting to get worried and concerned and trying to figure out how to help you.
Yeah.
So like, they read your journal?
I kept a journal and I was just kind of writing. There were only a few entries about, I kind of wrote about this specific issue.
So then they approached you, and how did they do that?
Well, we kind of came in and we sat in my parents' bed, and my dad was sitting in a chair across from the bed, and my dad kind of gave me a blessing before, and so I was sitting next to my mom and I was kind of like leaning against her so she couldn't really see my face, but we were kind of hugging. So, and then after the blessing, my dad asked me, "Jordan, I'd like to ask you a question." I was like, "Okay, Dad." And he said, "Are you struggling with feelings of homosexuality?" And I kind of fell apart. I was like, "Yes," and I kind of cried in my mom's shoulder for a few hours, so yeah.
Oh, wow. So pretty heartbreaking and tender moment then between the three of you.
Because I thought I was waiting for the yelling harsh words and being kicked out. Like, that's what I was expecting in those few minutes. But my parents were like, "This changes nothing. Like, we love you no matter what. Like, and you shouldn't have to go or change for us."
So was that pretty amazing to get that type of response from them?
Yeah, like when I kind of lied down in my bed afterwards, because it was kind of later in the day, I tried to wrap my head around it. I was like, "Whoa."
Like, what just happened?
Yeah, like, I was like, "Am I dreaming?" I mean, like, I had no idea that this was going to happen.
Hmm. Wow.
It's hard to wrap your head around having parents so awesome.
Yeah. Please.
Just kidding.
Don't leave me out.
And an awesome sister, of course.
Right. Well, it is awesome. I completely concur with that. I think that this is the way to do it. You know, this is the way, or one of the good ways to approach this issue. So that, you know, where you can count on each other and have this kind of underlying message that, you know, we as a family, we can figure anything out. We can do this, you know, and we can be there for one another regardless, you know, of what that problem may be. And that's a very gospel-centered message. And it sounds like, you know, your parents didn't allow fear or the threat of something different of, you know, that was maybe confusing to them from a religious perspective, didn't allow that to get in the way of really truly parenting you correctly. So that's a wonderful blessing that you had that, Jordan.
Yeah, definitely.
Thank you for joining us today on Mormon Mental Health. To discuss this episode, please check us out at mormonmentalhealth.org. To keep the podcast alive, please consider a donation today, again at mormonmentalhealth.org. Logo was provided by Daniel Singer. Music was generously donated by Lower Lights. Please check them out at thelowerlights.com. And thanks for listening. Over last tempestuous sea, chart and compass came from thee. Jesus saved.